You're listening to WOMM LP, the Radiator 105.9 FM in Burlington, Vermont.
Today is Monday, March 8th, 2010. I'm Laurel Nemi, your host for The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. Today on The Wildlife, I'll talk with Juan Carlos Cantu from the Mexico Office of Defenders of Wildlife. We'll talk about the illegal parrot trade and also preview the upcoming meeting of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. But first, let me play you today's creature call. This week's creature call comes from the rainforests of Central and South America. Now, listen carefully and see if you can guess today's creature call. At the end of the show, I'll play these sounds again, tell you what kind of animal made them, and also give you a preview of next week's creature call. Now, let me turn to my conversation with Juan Carlos Cantu from the Mexico Office of Defenders of Wildlife. During the first half of our conversation, we'll focus on the illegal parrot trade in Mexico and how his innovative research into the trade was used by the Mexican Congress to reform that country's wildlife law to ban all trade in parrots. During the second half of the interview, we'll concentrate on the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, also known as CITES. We'll talk about how the convention works and what controversies to expect for the upcoming Conference of Parties that begins March 13th. Juan Carlos Cantu directs and implements all programs of the Mexico Office of Defenders of Wildlife. Before joining Defenders, Juan Carlos coordinated the Oceans and Forestry campaigns for Greenpeace Mexico, where he conceived and led the campaign to create the world's largest national whale sanctuary in all Mexican waters. He also co-founded a Mexican non-governmental organization called TEALIS, where he wrote many reports on the illegal wildlife trade. He's also worked for the Sea Turtle Restoration Project to get Mexico to use sea turtle excluder devices, and held several other positions. Juan Carlos joined Defenders of Wildlife in 2002, and in 2007 he published a landmark report on the illegal parrot trade that was instrumental in getting the Mexican Congress to reform the wildlife law to ban all trade of parrots. Over the years, his efforts have helped get many endangered species of parrots, including the yellow-crested cockatoo and the blue-headed macaw, uplisted to Appendix 1 of CITES. He has also created 5 comic books on the illegal trade of sea turtles and started a radio show called Supervivencia, which creates public awareness about wildlife issues and is the highest-rated show on the station with over 400,000 listeners. When we talked recently, I asked Juan Carlos what first got him interested in the illegal parrot trade.
Well, the Mexican people, the Mexican culture, has been involved with parrots since pre-Columbian times. I mean, the Aztecs and all the people that lived in Mexico and also in Central America and South America, they were very much involved with parrots.
How so?
They used to capture them for pets, and they also ate them. But most importantly, they were very interested in parrots because of their feathers.
Would they use the feathers, or what about the feathers?
Yeah, they used to make clothes with the feathers, and also for various forms of art. They were so important, feathers, at that time, that the Aztecs, they were very warrior-like people, and every time they had a combat with another group of indigenous people and conquered them, they would ask as tribute packs of parrot feathers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and from some people in southern Mexico, at one point, they would be asking about 20,000 packets of parrot feathers.
So it was almost like money or gold.
Exactly. They were very, very, very important. And after that, when the Spanish came and conquered all of America, well, most of trade with parrot basically disappeared, but still they kept capturing parrots for pets. And so in Mexico, we have had parrots for pets for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years and many, many, many centuries. So it was part of the Mexican culture to have a parrot. And at one point, it was said that in Mexico, every family should have a parrot.
Was it just as pets or other uses too, like food?
Mostly as pets. And at one point, they would still be eating parrot in southern Mexico. But then the government forbid it because the thing with parrot is they do eat several seeds and fruits that are very toxic. And so people would get sick from eating parrots. So it was banned.
Oh, really? And,
yeah. Basically, people were just using parrots as pets. But there was a huge, huge overexploitation of the population of parrots. And afterwards, around the 70s and 80s, parrots became very popular in the U.S. and in Europe. And so most of the parrots were captured to be exported into the U.S. or even smuggled into the U.S. Hundreds of thousands of parrots were going into the U.S. and into Europe.
Were they all types of species of parrots, or were there particular species that were targeted, both in Mexico and in the U.S.? Was it the same species?
Well, in Mexico, we have 22 species of parrots and macaws. I would guess 20 or so species would be targeted. But mostly, they would like the Amazon parrots. There are many, many species of Amazon parrots, and also macaws.
Did the trade have an impact on the populations of these species?
By the end of the 80s, a lot of these species were now endangered. Their populations have declined so much. In Mexico, they started to ban the capture of these species. Up until 2 years ago, capturing parrots was still legal, but only for very few species, but around 5 or 6 species. Even though capturing parrots in Mexico was legal, most of the parrots that were being captured illegally by poachers.
So to capture a parrot legally, what would that take?
Well, the Environment Ministry would have to issue a permit to capture parrots and to sell the parrots. But the thing is, there was really no control. I mean, they tried for decades to control the capture and the trading in parrots. Nothing really worked. Because every time they issue a permit, for example, they would issue a permit for a specific species, for a number of parrots that could be captured, there was really no control after they issued the permit. Trappers would just go out into the field and they would trap any species they wanted and as many parrots as they wanted. And there was nobody there to monitor what they were doing. So in fact, they were capturing 5 or up to 10 times as many parrots as the permit allowed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So what was happening is that the legal trade in parrots was used as a cover for the illegal trade.
Was there any monitoring going on?
For Mexican authorities to monitor that legal trade was very difficult because there was no way to really know which parrot had been captured legally and which one was captured illegally. One of the things they tried to do is that they would put bands on the parrot's legs so that they would know which parrot was captured legally.
Did that work?
The trappers would capture a parrot. They would not put the band on the leg. And when they were selling the parrot to a customer, they would say, okay, if you want the parrot without the band, it costs that much. But if you want the band in leg, it's going to cost you a lot more. And in that way, they could use the band many, many, many times.
Could the band come on and off?
That was one of the problems. I mean, really the only way for a band to work is if you use a closed band that can only be put in a parrot leg when they are very young, when they are a chick. And those type of bands, you cannot put them on when they are adults.
Okay. So that they grow into it, sort of.
Exactly, and you cannot take them off. But the bands that they were using were the types that you can open up. So, in fact, there was no control at all. Everybody knew, even the authorities, that there was a huge illegal trade of parrots. What they said was, well, we know there is illegal trade, but we don't know the volume. We don't know who's doing it. We don't know which species are being affected. We don't know in which regions. We just don't know anything because it is illegal. And since it is illegal, we just cannot study it, control it.
So what did you do?
So what we did a few years ago, we made the research ourselves, Defenders and other NGOs like Tielis. We did the research. It took us 2 years. And what we did was we interviewed the trappers.
I was going to ask, because that was really a groundbreaking study, because you really got a lot of information about the trade. And so how did you do that? You interviewed the trappers themselves.
Yeah, well, the thing is that in Mexico, trappers work in unions. First, we talked with the leaders of the unions. And then through the leaders, we were able to talk to the trappers. Now, these unions, they work legally. But we know for a fact that what they do is most of them, they trap illegally most of the time.
Were they willing to talk with you?
Yeah, incredibly. They didn't mind talking about what they did, because in their minds, they were really not doing anything wrong. They were just trapping birds. Most of them have been doing that for all their lives, and they learned the trade from their fathers and grandfathers. So it was just a normal thing to do. They really didn't believe that what they did was really illegal. Even though laws have changed, they just think of the work as something that was done wrong. I mean, they were just doing what they have been doing all their lives. And so they were very open about how they trapped parrots, how many parrots they trapped. We weren't able to talk to all of the trappers, but we talked with a lot of them, enough to extrapolate to the rest of the trappers.
What did you find out?
We found out they were trapping more than 75,000 parrots a year illegally. The legal permits for trapping would only account for about 2,000 or 3,000 parrots a year.
Oh, really?
So the immense majority of the parrots that were being trapped in Mexico were being trapped illegally.
And then what did you do with these findings?
When we finished the report, we took it to the authorities and showed them what was going on. And we told them, you have to stop the trade in parrots, because the measures you are taking to control the trade are not working. And you're only covering up the illegal trade. And populations are really declining. And we now have, of the 22 species, 11 species are endangered. And 20 species are in some category of risk. Some are threatened and some are protected. So the thing is, the legal trade in parrots is driving the parrot populations to extinction, because they're covering up the illegal trade. Eventually, we took the information into Congress, and we were able to convince the deputy chamber and the Senate to change the law so that all parrot trapping in Mexico was banned back in October of 2008. So now it is totally forbidden to capture parrots or to trade with wild parrots in Mexico.
So to capture or trade, what about possess them or sell them?
Well, you cannot do it with wild parrots. The thing is, since a lot of people already have wild parrots as pets, I mean, they can keep them, but they cannot sell them or trade them. And now you cannot buy wild parrots. You can still buy captive bred parrots, especially from exotic species. Mexico has become one of the biggest importers of exotic species of parrots in Latin America. And this has been happening for the past 10 or 15 years, and it has been growing. And so now most of the parrots you see in pet shops or in markets or by street vendors are species of parrots from Africa or Asia or from South America.
I wanted to back up and talk about how the trade works. You know, how are the parrots collected? You know, how are they transported? And okay. I've heard a lot about the wandering birdmen, and I wanted you to tell me a little bit about them.
Yeah, in Mexico, I call them pajareros. It just means birdmen. These birdmen, what they do is they sell parrots on the street. They walk around with the cages of parrots, and they put the cages one on top of another until they build a tower of cages. And they carry that tower of cages in their backs, like a backpack, but just a tower of cages of different species of birds. And they walk around the streets selling all types of singing birds and parrots. And, well, this is something that was done all the way back from the time of the Aztecs. But in Mexico City right now, it is forbidden to sell animals in the streets. So all the people, all the birdmen that you see nowadays in Mexico City, they're selling illegally. But you can still see them. But in many other cities in Mexico, it is still legal. You can see the birdmen still walking around with the tower of cages.
Are the birdmen the same people who are also trapping the birds, or have they purchased the birds from trappers?
No, they purchased the birds from trappers. I mean, you must recall that they work in unions, and these unions, they have trappers, transporters, distributors, and salesmen of birds. So what they do is, legally, they would get a permit to trap parrots in some parts of Mexico.
And how does the trapping work?
The way they trap parrots is they use nets. But during the breeding season, they would go and poach the nests and take the chicks out of the nests, which is also illegal. The Mexican government has never allowed trappers to take out chicks from nests. But during the breeding season, you can see hundreds and thousands of chicks being sold all over Mexico. But mostly to trap adults and juveniles, they use nets.
So how do the nets work?
What they do is they have a pet parrot, and they tie this pet parrot to a small tree, and they put a net near the tree. And when a flock of parrots are flying by, they move the branch where the pet parrot is so that he starts to scream. And so when he starts to scream, the flock of parrots comes down to see what's going on. And so they perch on the tree. And once they are on the tree, the trapper grabs a branch and throws it on top of the tree. And so the parrots are scared, and they fly into the net. And that's how they trap them.
Oh, really? So you trap more than one at a time. You trap several.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the flock. You can trap dozens of parrots at a time. When you trap a lot of parrots at one time, it is very difficult to take them out of the net. And so they get stressed out, and several of them will die in the net. And then they bring the parrots to what's called a hoarder. It's just a guy that buys the parrots from the trappers, and he waits until he has enough parrots to transport them to a city to be sold or distributed to several cities. The problem is that once they have a lot of parrots, especially when they have chicks, they have many problems to take care of them, or even just to feed them. And so a lot of parrots start to die. And during the transport, they put them in very small cages, and they just pack them like sardines or in bags. And sometimes they drug them, or they give them alcohol so they are quiet and do not scream during transport, so that the authorities don't perceive them. Well, during transportation, a huge percentage of them also die because they are packed so tightly that they cannot feed, they cannot drink, they get hurt. The heat and the cold, they just are really mistreated during transport, and so a lot of them die.
What kind of percentages are we talking about? How many birds, or what percentage of birds, die during this process?
Well, it depends. In some cases, even up to 100% of a shipment will die.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There have been several cases in Mexico where all of the parrots will die during transport. But most of the parrots will die afterwards once they reach the distributors and salesmen, because they have been through all the process. And by the time they reach the people who are going to sell them, they are so weak and sick that most of them, well, at least half of them will die during this part of the process. In total, around 77% of all parrots that are trapped will never reach the hands of a customer. Out of every 10 parrots, 8 will die.
How many birds are we talking about?
So in Mexico, we were talking around 50 to 60,000 parrots would die before reaching a customer. So most of the parrots that are being trapped are dying. So it's a very wasteful and inhumane practice. So we are working very hard to put a stop to it.
Now, where do most of the parrots end up being sold? I think one thing I was struck by your research was that it used to be that most of them were destined really for the U.S., and that's changed, that there's a big domestic market, and that there's still a U.S. market. Can you talk about the markets a little bit?
As I said before, during the 70s and the 80s, most of the parrots would go to the U.S. market or to Europe, and even some were going to Japan. But that started to change after the 80s, and most of the parrots would stay in Mexico for the domestic market. I mean, we estimated that around, I don't know, 3 or maybe 15% of the parrots are still going to the U.S. market, and the rest are staying here in Mexico. The thing is that in the U.S., there is still a market for several species of parrots, especially Amazons, like the yellow-naped Amazon and yellow-headed Amazon.
What makes them so special?
Well, they are very good talkers. I mean, they are big parrots, and they are especially good talkers. So there's still a market for them in the U.S., even though these species are bred in captivity a lot in the U.S., the prices that you can buy a wild parrot are very much less than the price for a captive-bred parrot. So people are still going to buy a wild parrot because they're very much cheaper.
Oh, really? So just by way of example, how much is a parrot worth if it's captive or wild?
A captive-bred parrot could go from between $500 and $1,000, depending on the species. And a wild parrot, I mean, you can find it for $200, $300, maybe even less, depending on the species. And it also depends on where in the U.S. you buy the parrot.
What do you mean?
The closer to the Mexican border, they are cheaper, and the farther away they are from the Mexican border, they cost more because they have to be transported. And it is the same thing in Mexico. The price of parrots depends on where they are being sold. If they are sold near the place they inhabit, they are much cheaper than if they are sold in the cities inland. So it all depends on how much they have to be transported, how far away.
With your report and the findings, it was interesting you said that there was a reaction and that it did result in a change in the law. And I was wondering how that all came about. What was the initial reaction of the Congress to, you know, when you took these findings? Was there opposition to changing the law?
Well, yes, there was a huge opposition from the environmental authorities. They just did not want a ban to be put in place.
Why not?
Because, well, it just didn't reflect well on their work. Because their work is to protect the species, help the conservation, especially of the endangered and threatened species. And they thought that by letting some people capture some of the species and some of the parrots, they were really helping the species, and in reality, it was not working. So they didn't like it at all. They went to Congress to talk against the change in the law. But incredibly, in the deputy chamber, when we first presented the information and the proposal, all of the deputies from the different parties, they were, aghast at what was happening. They all said immediately, we have to stop it. And they drafted the bill immediately after we gave the presentation, and they voted upon it the next week. And it was approved by consensus in 2 weeks after that. This is the first time we have ever seen that happen.
I was going to ask, is that normal? That seems amazing.
No, it was amazing. I mean, we work a lot with the Congress, and we have never seen a bill pass so fast and by consensus. After that, it went to the Senate. And in the Senate, we had a huge fight because the Environment Ministry really lobbied the senators to vote against it. And it took a while for it to be approved, but finally the senators approved it also by consensus.
Then what happened?
After that, it took a while for it to be published and to enter into force, because again, the Environment Ministry didn't want to publish it. So, but finally, it was published. All in all, it took about a year and a half to pass through both chambers in Congress and to be published and enter into force.
What's happened since then?
Since then, we have been monitoring street salesmen and markets and pet shops. And we have talked to trappers also. And there has been a change, because with the trappers, we talked to them and they told us that most of them have stopped trapping parrots altogether. And some of them have taken to starting their own captive breeding programs, especially with exotic parrot species. And we have seen that in most of the street birdmen and in markets, most of the parrots that are being sold are exotic species now, and also in pet shops. We started a huge national campaign to alert the people that the law had changed, and that it was now illegal to buy wild parrots.
And what did you do for this public awareness campaign?
We have been working with several institutions. Now we are working also with the Environment Ministry. They have now changed their minds and now are working with us. And we created a web page where we give information on all the 22 species of parrots and macaws, and on the law and what people can do to help the conservation of these species. And basically, the message is not to buy wild parrots. And so we produce a bunch of posters with the message. And we have been distributing posters all over Mexico. And we created a whole bunch of materials, like children's books for coloring books, story books, comic books for young people and adults, a teacher's kit, stickers, and we have been distributing all of these materials with NGOs and with scientists and with people who want to work with this campaign and want to help distribute the material and distribute the information. And so it has been very successful. There's a huge amount of NGOs now working in the campaign, and there's also several institutions that are working with us. A lot of scientists are working and helping us distribute the information and the posters and putting it up everywhere. And now there's a lot of people that are creating their own conservation programs for parrots using the material that we have created.
Why have you focused on this public awareness approach?
Now, the thing is, it's very difficult to chase around poachers and traffickers and trying to control them. And so the idea behind the campaign is to try to get people to stop buying wild parrots. And so if we can decrease the demand, the offer is going to decrease as well. And in that way, we're going to be able to get the legal ban to really work.
And have you seen any illegal wild caught parrots enter the market and being passed off as captive bred? Or is there a way to tell?
Well, yes, there's still illegal trade, and still there's some parrots being sold. What they say nowadays is that they're not Mexican parrots, that they are parrots from South America or from Africa. And the thing is that, most people really cannot tell the difference between a Mexican parrot and a South American parrot or an African parrot. So we are trying to get people to understand that the only way to be really sure that it is a captive bred parrot, it's if it has a closed band on the leg. That's basically the only way to be really sure. And if they are doubtful, if they really don't know what they're buying, the best way to help the parrots is just not to buy them. If they think that the parrots that are being sold are wild Mexican parrots, to denounce it to the environmental authorities. On our webpage, we have a section where people can connect with the environmental authorities and denounce any salesman selling wild parrots. It has also worked very much. In fact, one of the things that has happened is in Mexico City, we have, what is the biggest wildlife market in all of Mexico. In this market, it has been working for the past 40 or 50 years. Incredibly, most of the animals that are sold there are illegal. And environmental authorities and enforcement authorities have not been able or have been unwilling to close down this market.
Why is that?
I really don't know. to be honest, it is something that we have been fighting for decades, and they just don't do it. They just don't do it. At one point, they argued that the laws in Mexico weren't strict enough for them to close down the market. I mean, you could not get these illegal traders and traffickers in jail. So the laws, we helped to change the criminal laws. Now they are incredibly strict. I mean, if you are caught selling an illegal wildlife, you can go to jail for 9 years or up to 12 years, and there's no bail.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but still, the thing is, the enforcement authorities, they grab the traffickers, they put them up in front of the judge, and, the judge will just let them go. This is something that happens not only in Mexico, it happens all over the world. For judges to compare crimes, I mean, when you have murderers and rapists and drug traffickers, and you have a huge amount of those, and then you bring a guy who's selling parrots. They say, "Oh, come on, don't bother me with that." So they just let them go. But the thing is that last year, for the first time in over three decades, the enforcement authorities captured the head of one of the biggest wildlife trafficker rings in Mexico, and they put him in jail.
Oh, really? What was that case about?
Well, he was selling parrots. And after they captured him for the first time in over three decades, no Mexican wild parrots were sold in this Mexico City market.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there has been a change. I mean, we are very confident about what's going on. And we know that it's going to take a long time to get people to really understand and know the law and for them to stop buying parrots. I mean, we're talking about a change of culture. But we're very confident that eventually we're going to be able to not see Mexican parrot for sale in Mexico.
Now, you've been involved also, in addition to changing the laws in Mexico, to get parrots uplisted to Appendix 1 of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, also known as CITES. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, especially since we're coming up on another CITES meeting, the Conference of Parties, in March.
Yes, the thing is that all species of parrots from all over the world, they are listed in CITES. No? CITES is the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. But in CITES, we have what are called lists or appendices. They are different. They're like Appendix 1 is the list where you have species that are threatened with extinction. And international trade in these species is banned, with a few exceptions. And then you have Appendix 2, where species are not necessarily threatened with extinction, but you must control the trade so trade doesn't endanger these species. Most of the parrot species of the world are listed in Appendix 2. And so several species of Amazons, Mexican species of Amazons that were in Appendix 2 needed to be put in Appendix 1 so that international trade with these species would become totally banned in order to decrease illegal trade with these species. What was happening was that for these species, even though in Mexico the environment authorities were trying to control trade and capture and trade with the species, a lot of them were being captured illegally and smuggled into other countries. And some of them were even being laundered as legal through CITES permits.
Oh, really?
Yeah. During the Conference of the Parties that occur every 2 or 3 years, we were able to get Mexico and other countries to present proposals to uplist these species from Appendix 2 to Appendix 1. Species like the red crowned parrot, the yellow naped parrot, the yellow headed parrot, the lilac crowned parrot. All of these parrots are endangered with extinction, and the populations in Mexico, I mean, they are really, really, really in very bad state. But still, a lot of them are being captured and smuggled, especially into the U.S. Now, the thing is that once you get these species into an Appendix 1, well, controls are more strict in all the countries in the world. So it was very important to get these species in Appendix 1 to try to control illegal trade. Well, we were very lucky and successful in getting these four species into Appendix 1. It took a long time, and for some of the species, it was a little bit hard because some of the countries just didn't want to, especially some European countries. They were lobbied very heavily by the pet industry. They didn't want the species to go into Appendix 1. They wanted to keep on trading the species. But, well, finally, we got them into Appendix 1. And so now, it is totally illegal to trade with these species, the wild specimens of these species.
And when did that occur? What year were they uplisted?
Well, it occurred in different years.
Oh, okay.
First, we got the red-crowned parrot back in the, 1997, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2002, we were able to get the two Amazon species into Appendix 1, the yellow-naped and the yellow-headed. And in 2004, we got the lilac crown into Appendix 1. But now that we were able to get a total ban in Mexico, the ban includes all exports as well. It is now illegal to export wild specimens of parrots of any species. So right now, there's no need to get any more species into Appendix 1.
Okay, I was about to ask if there were any proposals coming up for the next Conference of Parties in March that were of particular interest, but now maybe we can expand that outside of parrots. Sort of, what are the main issues to expect for the upcoming meeting?
Well, the upcoming meeting, we're going to have, like all meetings, a huge amount of proposals of all kinds of species of fauna and flora.
What are some of the big proposals in the pipeline?
There are proposals regarding elephants. Elephants are one of the banner species of CITES. because what has happened with elephants, it's really the reason why CITES was created. Elephants have been killed for the ivory for centuries. But it was not until after the Second World War and after the African and Asian European colonies became independent that overexploitation of elephants really increased. And that was because after a lot of these colonies became independent, there was in many of these colonies, civil wars occurred. And so what happened was that a huge amount of weapons went into these countries. These countries were really, really poor. And the only thing that they have really at that time, they didn't have any industry. They only had their natural resources to use, and they had elephants. And they started killing and killing and killing the elephants until the populations declined really, really bad. And in just a few decades, I mean, half the population of elephants just disappeared totally. And so what happened was the elephant species were put on Appendix 1 to try to control poaching, illegal trade, and overexploitation. But in 1997, the Conference of the Party took place in Zimbabwe. And at that time, there were proposals to downlist the populations of some of the southern African countries, like Zimbabwe, Namibia, South Africa, if I recall.
And that was because their elephant populations had grown?
Well, the elephant populations of the southern African countries were more healthy than the populations of the northern African countries and of India and the Asian countries. But still, even though the populations were healthier, they still had huge, huge problems of poaching, and they were not controlling it at all. Everybody was really scared that if you downlisted these populations into Appendix 2 and legal trade in ivory resumed, then poaching would increase. And it would affect not only the populations in these southern African countries, but the populations in the rest of the African countries and in India and the rest of the Asian countries. But still in 1997, after a huge, huge discussion, it was accepted. After that, at every COP, we have been seeing proposals to downlist more populations of elephants.
So what is being proposed for elephants at this conference of parties?
At this COP next month, we're going to see proposals from Tanzania and Zambia to downlist their population of elephants to sell the ivory. And what has happened is exactly what we all feared. The poaching has increased so much that in some countries, elephant populations have all but disappeared. There's practically no control over illegal trade. So there's also a proposal by Congo and Kenya, Ghana, Liberia, Mali, Rwanda, and Sierra Leone for a 20-year moratorium on elephants. And the thing is that at the last COP, a 9-year moratorium was approved, but now Tanzania and Zambia are just they're breaking that moratorium by presenting proposals to downlist the elephants. And the thing is that at every COP there's a huge discussion on elephants. This is something that we see in many other species, like with marine species.
So what are some of the controversies regarding marine species?
There's a huge amount of countries that don't want to see any marine species listed in CITES at all, in Appendix 2 or Appendix 1 or any of the appendices. The number of proposals for marine species have increased every COP. This year, the United States made several proposals, especially for sharks, like the hammerhead shark.
What prompted the proposal to protect these sharks?
The hammerhead shark has seen some population declines that are staggering.
Just how big?
In some regions, the populations have declined by 70%. 70%.
Wow.
In other regions, they have declined by 80 or 90%.
Wow.
In some regions, by 98%. And in one region, by 99.99%. I mean, if this was a terrestrial species, it would have been listed in Appendix 1 a long time ago. But many countries just don't want marine species to be listed in CITES. And so it has been very difficult to list shark species in CITES at all. And for this COP, the U.S. has two proposals for the hammerhead shark and also for the oceanic white tip shark. And there's also two other proposals for two other species of sharks. At last COP, there were two proposals for sharks, and they didn't pass. And we're hoping that this time, at least one or two of the shark proposals could be approved. It's going to be very difficult, but we're going to lobby and try to get them approved, because there really needs to be a control of shark trade, because it has the shark trade, especially for fins, has increased exponentially for the past few decades. A huge amount of the shark species of the world are now endangered. If we cannot get them into CITES, we're going to see first the commercial extinction of many of the shark species of the world, and then probably the biological extinction as well.
Can you talk about some of the other controversial proposals?
Another proposal that's very controversial is going to be discussed, and that was made by the U.S., is for the polar bear. The polar bear is already listed in Appendix 2, and the proposal is to uplist it from Appendix 2 to Appendix 1, so that all trade in polar bear is banned. The thing with the polar bear is that, as you know, climate change is really affecting the habitat of polar bears. And there's a prediction that the population of polar bears is going to be reduced by 70% in the next 40 to 50 years, just by climate change alone. The thing is, there's still a lot of hunting of polar bears. This is one of the, well, the second biggest threat to polar bears. So if this proposal goes through, which is going to be very difficult because the main range state, which is Canada, opposes it totally. Well, there's also other range states like Russia and Denmark and Norway and also the U.S., and it's going to be difficult to get this proposal through with one of the biggest range states opposing it. But there are several good news on that. I mean, what we do is lobby several Latin American countries, and we know that some of them are going to vote for this proposal. It is hopeful that the European Union also votes in favor of this proposal, but still it's going to be very difficult. And then there's a lot of other species that are important.
Like what?
One that's going to be also very controversial is the Atlantic bluefin tuna. I mean, this species is also has had incredible declines. It's on the brink of commercial extinction. But still, many countries don't like this proposal at all. And the proposal is to put it in Appendix 1.
Is it listed now at all?
No, it's not listed. Some countries are saying that, okay, we know this species meets the criteria for Appendix 1, but let's just put it in Appendix 2 right now and wait to see if we can control trade so that it doesn't go to Appendix 1. So it's going to be a huge fight to get these species listed at all.
Which countries are on which side for that, for the Atlantic bluefin tuna?
Well, Japan is one of the countries that totally opposes the listing. The thing is that for a species to be approved, you need two-thirds of the votes to pass. In reality, it's very easy to block a vote, a proposal. The Japan, well, they control a huge amount of votes. They have a voting block of around 20 or 30 countries. It's going to be very difficult for this proposal to go through, but there's hope. as well with as with the sharks and the polar bear. And then there's a lot of other proposals for a huge amount of species. Like, well, there's a lot of reptiles, like the ornate dab lizard for appendix one, the Caesar's spotted newt, the Baker's spiny-tailed iguana, the red-eyed tree frogs. There's also for a beetle, for trees, and for many other species.
Is this typical?
Every COP, you discuss around 30 or 40 different species. The COPs, these meetings are so huge that they last for 2 weeks. And you have two committees working at the same time, one discussing the species proposals and the other one discussing resolutions. It's a huge amount of work.
And is it worth it? Is CITES as a treaty effective?
CITES is one of the few international treaties that does work. It really has an impact on the conservation of species. Because most of the international treaties, well, they're not binding, really. So any country can accept or not to do what the treaty tells you to do. But with CITES, it is different. Because if a country does not comply with the resolutions and with the listings, the CITES Secretariat can send a notice to all parties to stop the trade with that country on a particular species or on all species. So it does have an effect. And most countries don't want to be blacklisted. So most of the countries do comply. So that's why CITES is really important. Right now, there's 175 countries that are members to CITES. So it's a very important treaty. The most important wildlife trade treaty that there is. So we're very hopeful for a lot of the species to be protected by this treaty.
And then my last question is, if people are interested in these issues, both of CITES and also the illegal parrot trade, what can people do to help?
Well, first of all, it is very important for people to be informed about what's going on, because the relationship most people have with wildlife is through a pet shop or through a zoo, and that's about it. And when your relationship with wildlife is through a pet shop, you just don't get the information of what's really going on. I mean, when people see an animal being sold in a pet shop, I mean, they think it's, first of all, they think it is legal. Then they think that it is something that's normal and nothing is happening to the species by it being traded. So the reality is that for a lot of species all over the world, mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, fish, and even plant species, international trade is really damaging for the wildlife populations. And by buying wildlife in pet shops, you're really fostering the trade. I mean, you're really encouraging people to go and trap, collect, and capture these animals. And in most countries, in immense majority of the countries, wildlife trade is not done in a sustainable manner. Most of the wildlife trade is done through overexploitation. And also, a lot of the trade, it is not done in a humane manner. And animals not only suffer, but a lot of the animals that are trapped die before they reach a customer, before they reach the US or Europe or Japan. and they will die before they are sold. So people really need to get informed. And one way to get informed about trade in wildlife, I mean, you can get enter the pages of a lot of NGOs in the U.S. and in Europe and everywhere that are working on this issue, and they have a lot of information on CITES and on wildlife trade, on the different species, and well, people should learn about what's going on. And once they learn about what's going on, they should. My recommendation to everyone is not to buy wildlife for pets, because wildlife don't make good pets at all. I mean, if you really need a pet, there's dogs and cats but wildlife, they don't make good pets at all, and you're really hurting them. The conservation of this species is not enhanced at all by you buying wildlife. And that's not only with live or wildlife. Even when you buy products that come from wildlife, you are really hurting the wildlife populations. I mean, when you buy ivory or fur, any product that comes from a wild animal, you can be sure that most of it has come from unsustainable practices. And so if for people, if they're really concerned in really helping wild animals and wild plants, the best thing is get informed and don't buy wild animals or plants or their products. I mean, there's really no need to buy them at all.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed those insights into the illegal parrot trade in Mexico, and also the preview of CITES with Juan Carlos Cantu, Manager of Mexico Programs for Defenders of Wildlife. Now, let me play you today's creature call once again and see if you've guessed it correctly. The animals that make these sounds are a CITES Appendix 1 listed macaw that lives in the rainforests of Central and South America. Its body is primarily red, with bright yellow on its upper wings and royal blue on its wingtips and dark blue on their tails. Do you have an idea yet? They're scarlet macaws. Once again, here's the sound of scarlet macaws. For next week's creature call, I'll switch to the cat family and play the sound of greeting and contentment from this large predator. Be sure to tune in next week when I'll replay this strange sound from the wild world and reveal the animal that made it. Next week, I'll also talk with Grace Good Gabriel, Asia Regional Director for the International Fund for Animal Welfare. We'll talk about tiger conservation, the international trade in tiger parts, and the industry of tiger farming in China. Archived episodes of The Wildlife are available on iTunes, at my website, laurelnimi.com, and at laurelnimi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, if you have comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnimi.com. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nimi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, in Burlington, Vermont.